This is Understanding Money and I am Owen McGee. You're very welcome back. If it's your first time, you're very welcome. Today is all about couples and their money, but don't worry, if you're single, this is also going to be relevant to you. We're not going to alienate the singles. This is more got to do with couples, singles, it doesn't really matter. It's about people's relationship with money, but it's also about how that relationship with money can interfere with your relationship with your other half. So that's what today is all about. We're going to be talking to Anita. And full disclosure, Anita is a great mate of mine. And we've had many chats and many drinks and lots of time together. And her and her husband are great friends of Clara and I. And what I would say is the reason why I've brought her on today is because of the insight that she has into how couples and individuals and their relationship with money. I think you're going to get a huge amount from that. We'll also have your Q&A, as we always do, and then we'll wrap up. So you know what? You don't need to listen to me. Let's just jump in. Let's hear from Anita straight away. I'm joined in studio by Anita. And as I've already said, Anita and her husband Johnny are great friends of Clara and I. And I'm delighted to have you in studio. But rather than me introduce you, Anita, tell everyone what you do. What you do for a living, I suppose.
Sure. Counselor, psychotherapist based in Castleknock Village. I'm doing it 13 years. After a career change, decided to train and fell in love with the profession, fell in love with the work. I started my private practice just before COVID.
Well.
So that was interesting. But it worked out, you know, the first couple of months, none of us knew what was going to happen. And then it just worked out. And
now I do remember during COVID, one of the things you did was you used to do some of your sessions in the Phoenix Park. You'd go for a walk.
Walk and talk. Yeah.
And
I'd say that, effective.
Yeah. And do you ever jump back to that now from time to time, or do you not? Or?
It's definitely an option. You know, obviously you'd have to have some sort of a therapeutic relationship built with the client. It works better that way.
Right.
I did try one or two with a consultation and then we did the walk and talk, but it's just because you don't have that eye contact. And that's incredibly important, that presence, that one-to-one. Even now I offer online, a combination online phone. But really, you just can't beat being the one-to-one. But walk and talk is an option for some clients.
Yeah. It's funny, because we'd have that in private practice as well, where I would have been absolutely dead set against, unless you're doing it face-to-face, you're not going to get the same out of the meeting and it's not the same. We have adjusted quite a bit. And I think you're on a different level in terms of the level of engagement required when you're in front of a client. But we are managing to get through it because it just works away so well for us. And probably about 90% of our clients now would be online. Yeah, so it does. And it works for the team and it works for us. There's nothing better than getting in a room with somebody and actually talking to them face to face and really getting to know what's going on for them. Is there a specific area that you work in? Is there areas that you prefer to work in maybe, or that you find you've just been lured into and you keep getting referrals to these types of clients? And it doesn't matter what it is. Like, is there any particular, I know we're talking about couples today, but it doesn't necessarily have to be about couples, but is there a particular area that you enjoy more or that you seem to be just getting attracted to the whole time?
It depends. At the moment, I have a lot of young women, young career women coming into me and stress management, personal development, that kind of thing. Then you'll get a kind of bout of, and especially like we were talking about COVID, anxiety and depression, grief and loss.
Right.
Very complicated grief, you know, with people passing. So I suppose, answer to your question, whoever's willing to do the work, that's who I like working with.
Yeah.
You know, why counselling? Why now? How can I help?
Yeah.
Same couples.
Yeah.
You know, why counselling? Why now? And it's better, you know, couples coming to me now, they both want to come. Whereas, say, 5-6 years ago, one was kind of dragged, shall I say, if that's the right way to put it, or convinced to go, and they really didn't want to be there. And that's not going to work, you know.
And sorry, the difference between 5-6 years ago and today is that you have just put the foot down and said, if both people aren't willing to work with me, it's not going to work.
A little bit of both.
Okay.
It's now couples coming to me and they've had the conversation, they're both willing to commit to the time and the cost, you know, to coming and do the work. And then, yes, I do put my foot down. I'm very, very clear. You know, what do you want? How can I help? What's going on?
It is a money podcast.
Yeah.
So let's talk about money.
Absolutely.
How often is money a problem? And I did say at the start of this, yes, the overarching kind of thing here is couples, but it's also got to do with individuals. Really what I want to talk to you about and understand is people's relationship with money, but also how money can affect people's relationship with the other person in their life too, their partner. So when it comes to money, how often is money a problem for an individual or for a couple?
Money will always come up, especially with couples. Money will always come up in some shape or form, whether they're moving the house or it's a blended family or IVF, they're going through IVF.
The cost of that.
And also, I know in another one of your podcasts, you were talking about financial crisis. Mm. If they're coming, you know, usually it's a breakdown in the relationship of some sort. Communication, is that's what we're starting with. But yeah, money, they don't present. They don't say, Anita, we want to talk about, you know, money issues. But absolutely, it will come in at some stage.
And so is it more like a symptom of another problem? Is it rarely the problem or?
It can be. They can come, you know, they could say, we've totally, you know, disconnected. We want to reconnect or like that again. We want to expand our family, whatever it is. And then you might get the sharp comment of, well, we can't afford it.
Right.
And then I will, like, because I'm very comfortable talking about money with clients. I think it's incredibly important, male and female. And what's very interesting is it doesn't matter. Of course, it doesn't matter to me what your salary is, what your career is, what you do. It matters how you live. It matters, is it working for you? And also, are you happy in your job? It's frightening sometimes when I say to people, are you happy? Do you like your job? Nobody likes their job, Anita. And I go, well, I like my job. I have friends who love their job.
Yeah.
And then go into that exploration and then whether it's a husband or wife situation, whatever it is, but you can't leave your job. But then they might be really struggling with their mental health in a job they're unhappy in.
Yeah, and we'd see that too, because you'd be sitting in front of it and we'd be talking about what your long-term financial future goals are. And it sometimes can be uncovered during particularly a client first meeting, where all of a sudden you realize they're miserable in their job. And they are staying there because they think the other person in the couple wants them to stay there to continue with the same level of lifestyle. Yeah. But actually, when you peel it off a little bit, what you find is the other person saying, I just want them to be happy. And if we have to cut the lifestyle, we'll cut the lifestyle. Yeah. Because, like, maybe in your case, they tell you, because we're miserable right now. Mm-hmm. And if the job is part of the reason, and if you're going to be happier in a lesser job and a lesser salary, not lesser job, in a job with a lesser salary, well, we could fix everything else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that happens. That happens. That conversation comes up and I welcome it. And, you know, I will say to them, go home, have the cup of tea, have the bottle of wine, have the meal, write everything down, you know, the basic, just pen and paper and have the discussion.
And what we're talking about there is back to communication
back
again.
To communication, yeah.
So, I have to work this job because he wants me to, or I have to work this job because she wants me to. But actually, if you had the conversation, you know what, I'd much prefer to have you than have the money. And that will make the difference. It's interesting when you think back, and I know you're 13 years in this profession, but the amount of couples post 2008 who I would have come across where the money had disappeared and now they were left with each other.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they realised they didn't like each other too much. And there was certain talk of strategic divorces at that stage because the assets were down, there was feck all to split and it was a very easy divide and they just walked away from each other. So it is a very difficult one to navigate in terms of, like, having no money. If you're happy with no money, you're going to be very happy with lots of money. But it's not... The opposite is not the case.
When it changes.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
And COVID brought that up as well.
Yeah.
You know, the rate of separation, the rate of divorce. Again, I don't have the exact stats. Figures, but yeah, I had a lot of inquiries from couples.
COVID was good for business, wasn't it?
Well, for me it was. Not for everyone else.
People started killing each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because, you know, you could have, and there's a couple that pops into my mind when we're talking about this. They had really good jobs, really well-paid jobs, and a few kids, all the holidays, the nice cars, all going on. And then, you know, wages are cut, the dynamic changes, and what are they left with? Each other. So it was with the work that I would have done with them is stripping it all back, back to basics.
Yeah.
And yes, we were talking about money. And interesting when, you know, the husband, the wife, women are a little bit more open. They don't really mind. Maybe it's to another woman talking about how much money they're on. And she blurted out a salary and he couldn't believe it.
Mm.
But that that is just a nugget of information that I have. I don't do anything with that information. You know, part of me goes, oh, fair play to you. You know, good for you.
Yeah.
But does that work for you?
But what's interesting about it is people sometimes would say, oh, we're going to have to tell Owen all of their salaries and all of her assets. Like, I am right in it with a client. When I'm looking at a client's file and I'm sitting in front of the client, I know all about it. Mm-hmm. But I'm really sorry, and maybe I shouldn't say this professionally, but 20 minutes later, I'm in my next file.
Absolutely.
And if I meet you on the street, I'm not going to have a balance sheet appears in the back of my brain that I can look at and say, oh yeah, that's what that person's worth. Mm-hmm. Like, at the end of the day, they're just numbers and it's the person you're dealing with.
Yeah.
And the numbers aren't what you remember. You remember that their kid's a great GAA player or something else about them. It's not the numbers you remember. Mm-hmm. And it is interesting when you talk about one person being quite closed about their salaries and the other person being quite open. Does that cause much friction? Like, do you think that afterwards, in that circumstances where they blurted out the salary, there was a kind of a discussion afterwards?
Absolutely.
Or was it a discussion for you? Did you get to see it?
I see it all. I see it all. Because sometimes when you're working with a couple, it is like a tennis match. And, you know, friends would say, oh my God, do you break up all these fights? And I'm like, well, I don't break up fights, but I'm in the middle of fights. Mm. And it is like a little bit of a tennis match. And you're like that, looking at them. But for me, I'm getting the information. Mm. I'm getting the nuggets. And I will zone in on that. Yeah. Tell me, how does that feel? Would you like to, do you want to go back, you know, again, back to the wife? I'm using the standard kind of, the wife is working part-time. Would you like to go back working full-time? Yes, actually, I would. I love work. I miss my career. So again, that brings up
a whole pile of other dynamics.
Do
you ever come across a situation, because I've seen it a couple of times, where you've got two people, and let's just make it very generic, both on 50 grand a year.
Sure.
And let's actually go male, female, let's use that as an example, 50 grand a year each, and then she gets a massive promotion to 150 or 200, and he's sitting on 50. And you know what? We have to be very careful what we say in these podcasts,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
It could be the other way around. But in my personal experience, having viewed that, for men, for some reason, it seems to be harder to accept that than if the salary increase was the other way around. Mm-hmm. Like if they're both on 50 and the man goes to 200, mm-hmm. and there is research that backs this up,
yeah,
right?
And I would agree.
Yeah, that the man will kind of go, yeah, that's fine. And the woman will kind of accept it, mm-hmm. right? And I, to cover myself here, I did read a piece of research from the US that showed that where the man is paying, if the figure goes, if the woman is paying more than 60% of the costs, the man starts to really find that difficult.
And I would agree, and I would see that.
And how do you handle that then? Let's just say, right, let's say you've got a couple, let's say I'm the man and I'm the one feeling it. Oh, our salaries used to be the same. Now she earns much more than me. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there and I'm feeling, and I don't know why I'm feeling like this. I'm kind of going, this just feels wrong to me and I don't feel like the man anymore. And geez, I'm getting very, very caught up in a thing here where I'm going to have loads of complaints. I'm trying to be fair, right?
I know,
but
I know.
We're sitting here and I'm going, yeah, I'm just feeling, but I know intuitively, I know I shouldn't feel like this. I have no right to feel like this, but I do feel like this. So what can I do for me? What can you do for me, Anita, to say, well, this is how you're going to handle it?
Well, it's about thrashing that out, you know, and an awful lot of the time, that specific example, he doesn't know what's going on. So I'll dive in to how emotionally, how he feels about money. What's his experience with money? How was he raised? Mm. Like, and again, working with a couple of clients, it's interesting when a client say, Anita, I grew up poor.
Yeah.
Okay, so what does that mean?
Mm.
It means a different thing for you. It means a different thing for me. And I will zone in with the couple. I will zone in on him then, or her, whoever. Tell me, you know, Anita, we were embarrassed. You know, our shoes had holes in them. And that's, so it's about releasing the emotion around that feeling. And this means, and now, so my wife has gone here for argument's sake, and now I'm here. So that could be all deep-rooted emotional.
Could that be as simple as, right, if you take me as an example, right, and my made-up example, and that's why I'm making it personal to me.
Yeah.
But my mother was forced to give up work. She was a nurse. She had a child and she was told she had to give up work. That was just the way the times were at the time.
Sure.
And dad went out to work. Mm-hmm. So I'm the youngest of four boys, right? And so my three brothers, mum was at home, I was the next one along. So mum was, strange enough, when I was in my very early formative years, dad went out to work and mum stayed at home.
Same with me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mam stayed at home and looked after us. But But then when I was 10, Dad stopped working from ill health grounds.
Okay.
And Mam went back to work. Mm-hmm. And Mam initially started nursing, and she didn't, she actually moved away from that. Now she's a therapist. She's a, mm-hmm. she's a counsellor. And I wonder, does that give me a bit more of a balance? Because for my first 10 years, Dad was the one out working. For the second 10 years, Dad was the one making me a rasher sandwich every morning before I went out to school. Mm-hmm. And Mam was the one out working. And it flipped. And maybe if you were in a situation where your mother was the main breadwinner the whole way through, that's what you would expect. Is it as simple as that? Can it be as simple as that?
It can be, but again, it depends on the situation. But, you know, so you got the best of both worlds. You have great balance there. Mm. But again, you know, I would have clients so that would say, you know, my mom worked. My mom was the banker. My mom looked after all the money. And I find that really interesting. Mm. Obviously, professionally, it's different. But personally, for me, I go, wow. But because I had that standard traditional, you know, dad worked, mom stayed at home. That's what I had. Mm. But it really is to zone in on what the individual, because they're both bringing their stuff, want of a better word, into the marriage. So how were they, what is their experience? What is their value system? So I would say you and me have a similar value system. People first, then money, then things.
Mm.
But not everybody's value system works like that.
Yeah.
And again, another client popped into my mind, again, working with a couple, and he popped in a couple of times the type of car he drove. And I let it go, and I let it go. And I could see the wife, you know, the eye rolling. And then I just named it. And I said, why is it really important for me to know that you drive X brand of car? Oh, no, no, no. And that was really interesting to dive into that. We grew up poor.
Right.
It's all I ever wanted. So then it's not really the materialistic that you're looking at. It's really, you know, what that means to him, that he worked his way up to be able to afford that car.
Do you know the way when we're talking about stuff like this, right? Mm. And you've got, and you're kind of, and everything kind of stems back to your early childhood.
Absolutely.
Does anything ever happen in early 20s and 30s that actually affects us later on in life? Or is it all just laid in the sand at the very early ages? It's always the...
It always is. And then it always goes back. And then, and I really enjoy when a client, and they're very, very direct. Anita, I want to deal with this. And then I go, great, no problem. Plan is always great. But we always go back to childhood. Always. In some shape or form, you always go back to your childhood.
It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's crazy.
A whole pile of stuff we never dealt with. Mm-hmm. We're just carrying it along through life until life throws something at us that we have to deal with it.
Your childhood has to last you a lifetime. A client once said that to me.
Your childhood has to last you a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That kind of hits you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So let's get back to money, because I would drag you everywhere here, right? When it comes to money, what I'm here for you is communication.
Yeah,
it's important, but it's also recognizing that the other person had a different childhood to you, had a different upbringing to you, possibly has different values to you. And the only way you're going to respect that, you're going to work with that, is to communicate about it. Is that fair, Anita?
Absolutely, absolutely. To be crystal clear, to be honest, to be... brave enough to have that conversation. And, you know, especially if you are in couples therapy, if you are in therapy, go there, have the chat. You will be, you know, with a therapist, you'll be minded in that process. And like you say, there's so many things that are unsaid. There's so many clients sometimes that sit in front of me and they go, Anita, I have no idea what my husband's on.
All right.
I have no idea what my wife spends on X, Y, and Z. And I, you know, and it's not a judgment thing, but I am interested in the why.
Yes.
And what would it be like? So I would say to have to sit down, to be honest about the figures and to be honest about your feelings.
Mm.
And what's the plan? Mm. And what, you know, where's the joy working with young couples at the moment? And it is frightening when I ask them, because they're busy working and getting there and getting the house and getting the deposit and all the rest of it. What do you do for fun? And they look at me, fun?
Mm.
Fun? Mm. What was that? Or what is that? So
it's one of the things we, and people can often, it doesn't even have to be in their 20s and 30s. We have people, particularly in their 40s, and then they start to get worried about them in their 50s, where they work incredibly hard. Mm-hmm. They are kind of, whether they're high-end execs or they're business owners, and they just keep working. And my big fear is the day they stop working, particularly if they're execs and they have a D-day, like it's kind of 65 years of age, you're no longer a value to the business and out you go. The next day, those people lose a hell of a lot of meaning and purpose.
Oh, yes.
And what we always encourage people to do, and it's surprising how often it works, we'll encourage particularly high-end execs, practice retirement. Take a mini retirement. Don't go in, like we're recording this in April. Don't go in and say, I want to take July and August off this year. Mm-hmm. Go in and say, I want to take July and August off next year. And it's worked really well for execs who go in and do it, put it 18 months in advance. It works really well for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. First of all, you come back rejuvenated. You've mm-hmm. practiced retirement. And it's not about then sailing around the world, right? It's about also, it's about doing a bit of that, but it's also about sitting in your sitting room and reading the newspaper and seeing what retirement is going to feel like, seeing what a normal day is going to feel like. Mm-hmm. And you can come back rejuvenated, new thought process. That's why it works for you. Why does a business do it? The business does it because A, usually the person you're asking kind of goes, geez, I wouldn't mind doing that. Let's try to get this one signed off, right?
Yeah.
But B, it tests the organizational structure. Mm-hmm. How is this business going to cope without you here? Mm-hmm. And this can be huge benefit to it. And I am shocked time and time again when we give a decent runway into it, 18 mm-hmm. months, how many times people can come back and do it. And this comes back to, it all stems back to money. People feel like when we're weighing it up, you're going to take 2 months off, probably unpaid. 9 times out of 10, it's unpaid. Take 2 months off unpaid. And you know what? It might push your retirement age back by a year. Mm-hmm. You might have to work a year later. But that's where the balance of money comes in. Mm-hmm. And what I love about those conversations is when we're having them and it's a couple, and let's say it's a male-male couple, and the other one's sitting there going, we could do 2 months together. This would be us. And this is not, let's try and work our arses off to try and get to retirement and enjoy our life then. Mm-hmm. Let's enjoy it now. Let's Absolutely. Enjoy it next year.
Mm. I remember my dad saying to me when he was 50, he said, I don't want more money, Anita. I want more time.
Mm.
And that's really then, you know, and when he was 70, then he got sick. But he had 20 years of being semi-retired and having the absolute crack and playing his golf.
Yeah.
So now that's a good example because that's my example.
Yeah.
And with clients, I would say, especially if they're very stressed, if they're struggling with their mental health in work, and again, back to couples as well, identifying where the person is at, not to leave the job. It doesn't have to be drastic. Take the break.
Yeah.
Talk to your GP.
Yeah.
Tell them that you're struggling. Your physical health could be struggling as well. But absolutely, I would suggest that too. Take the break first.
Take the break.
Take the break first. Take the time out. What's 2 weeks? What's three? What's a month in the grand scheme of things? Take that time for yourself and then assess.
From all of your experience with couples and individuals and their problems with money, is there one little nugget you would give them? Or have you just given it to us? It's about time, not money.
I think so. And be clear about it. Be clear about what you want. You know, your wants, your needs. And don't be afraid to go for things. Don't be afraid to plan. Don't be afraid to reach out to a professional like yourself. And I would, that is how actually I work. I am more than happy to pass someone on. I am more than happy to say, you know, that fella owner off the telly, like, you know, get his book or just, you know, you might like the way he thinks about money. But yeah, reach out.
It's interesting because when I look at it, one of the things I love and one of the reasons why I'm so privileged in the job I have is I get to sit down with people at the start and build out their financial plans and really have, and I look, maybe it's because my mother's a therapist, maybe it's whatever it is, but we do have situations, and if clients are listening, some of them will know it, right? But we do. It's not unusual for people to cry in the first meeting, right? Because you're uncovering stuff and you're talking about their long-term financial future and you're really trying to build out a financial plan that has them living the life that they want to live. And sometimes you're having conversations, particularly if it's a couple where the three of us are in the power planner being in the room, so there's four of us there and we're all talking about stuff that this couple has never talked about before. And what I find what it is that the privilege part of it is we get to build out the plan. We get to jump in once a year then and see how it's going. And we get to see, we get the stories of, yeah, we did, we bought the camper. We've spent 3 months driving around Europe. Yeah, we went to see my son in New Zealand and I'll never forget it. Saw my son in New Zealand and I go every year now, Owen. Why? Because I flew business class like you told me to.
And this Enjoy
was,
it.
Yeah, and this was a woman who was kind of going out every 5 years. And she's not young. And she's kind of going out every 5 years because she hated the flight. And you gave her the financial confidence to say, no, you're okay. You can pay for business class. And now she's happy to go every year. And that's the privilege we have. But you're in a very privileged position as well.
Absolutely.
In terms of it's the absolute emotion and the real deep thoughts. What I always say about therapists, and I'm no stranger to therapists, but what I always say is it's the one room you can walk into and you are not being judged. You're paying for the person not to judge you. Mm-hmm. And you can say what your deepest, darkest thoughts are and you can walk out of it 100% confident that it's all staying in that room.
Yeah. and the space to do that, and the space. And it's interesting, sometimes when clients come in and they haven't really said much in the session, or there's nothing new, and that's fine, that's where they are. But at the end of it, you know, I'm kind of, oh, I wanted to get stuck into something, but, it, you know, I'm a very person-centered therapist. And after they go, oh God, gee, I really needed that, you know, but for them, so it works. It is that space.
Do you know, after a really difficult session, you know, we all feel like shit, don't you?
Feel
like shit for full hours after.
Full disclosure. Yeah.
You go into a session, you unload a whole bunch of stuff, you feel like shit.
Yeah.
Anita, it was really good to have you in. And you know what? It's funny, like there was a whole bunch of stuff I wanted to get to and I didn't get to. But let me ask you one question. If there's a couple or an individual sitting at home and they were thinking about engaging with a therapist, whether it's about money or something else, what would you say to them?
Definitely connect. Have a chat. I certainly will have a conversation before I meet a client. Just reach out. If the first therapist doesn't work, it's a chemistry thing. It's a connection thing. Look for another one. Look for a referral. Definitely send that email or the text or make the phone call.
Excellent. Anita, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Sarah, you're very welcome back. Thanks a million for coming back for Q&A today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. We've got two interesting questions today, don't we?
We do, yeah.
You're looking forward to the first one, aren't you?
I'm a bit nervous. I'm careful what I'm going to say.
Okay, let's just jump in and see what happens.
Hey, how are you? I have a question for you regarding couple finance. So I was wondering if a married couple, one wants to have a house and one doesn't, is it possible for one to go for a mortgage on their own and own the deed on their own? Thank you. Bye-bye.
Wow. What jumps into your head there, Sarah?
Just if this is a common question, I don't know if it would be. I don't even know.
You're a bit baffled by it, are you?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a lots of things that could be going on here, right? First of all, let's just try and answer the question directly. There is an issue. If you have a married couple, and she mentions they're married, right? Yeah. If you have a married couple living in a house, and I'm not saying there isn't a workaround here, but you're going to need a good broker, okay? But if you think about it from the bank's perspective, you've got a married couple, you sign what's called a family home declaration, I think is the word we use for it. Yeah. It's a legal document to say this is the family home, right? One of them's on the mortgage and one of them isn't. One of them's on the title deeds and one of them isn't. So one of them has the mortgage and the title deeds and the other one has nothing to do with the house, right? But they're married. It's been declared as the family home. And if she, for example, if she's the one buying the house, if she stops paying the mortgage, she's the only one with the legal agreement with the mortgage provider. She's the only one with the legal agreement with the bank. And the bank might find it hard to throw the person out of the house to sell it. So they say they want to repossess the house, sell it and get their mortgage back, right? They might find it harder to throw them out when they have no legal agreement with that person.
Okay, so for the husband in this situation?
For the husband in this situation, he has nothing to do with the mortgage, but it has been declared as his family home.
Okay.
He has been living there for X amount of years. Mm-hmm. She stops paying the mortgage and they might find it hard to get him out.
Okay.
In that circumstance. Yeah. So there is a bit of a problem. If you think about it from the bank's perspective, why would they sign up to that?
They'd be kind of going, no.
Now, there's a whole pile of other stuff going on in my head when I'm listening to that, right? They're married, so they're in a committed relationship. What's the word we used in the recent referendum?
A durable relationship.
They're in a durable relationship. Yeah. So they're in a durable relationship. And like, we don't know this person. We have very little information on them, which makes it easier.
It could be something even to do with their income.
Could be to do with their income. Yeah, it could be to do with that. Maybe if assuming she's the one who wants to buy it and he's not, could be to do with their income
or his like financial history. He could have had a bit of a crisis in the past, and maybe they're worried he won't get mortgage approved.
Yeah, or it could be to do with their opinion on where property prices are going to go.
Yeah.
So there's lots of factors that could be involved here. And ultimately, though, it could be something like we don't know this person, and we're not casting this person because we don't know them. We can speak openly. Maybe there's something else going on in the relationship.
Yeah.
And they really need to get to the root cause of why is it?
Yeah.
And maybe it's more my curiosity and your curiosity that
couples
we want to know.
Couples counselling with Owen McGee, we should rename the episode.
But you'd really want to get to the root cause. And maybe it's a very simple explanation, right?
Yeah.
But you'd really want to get to the root cause as to why one of them wants to do it and the other one doesn't.
Yeah.
And if it's financial, that can be dealt with. If it's an expectation of where property prices are going to go, I'll just remind everyone, my rule is always there's three rules when it comes to buying a home. If you love it, you can afford it, and you're going to stay in it long term, do it. Mm-hmm. Okay? Because house prices are going to always be going up and down, and there's never going to be a bell that rings to say, now is the time to buy the house. Okay? So if you love it, you can afford it, and you're going to stay in it for more than 15 years, just buy it. Okay? And there's lots of things that can be addressed here, but with the information we have, we don't know.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you're definitely not getting a mortgage on your own, but there are some barriers to it, and you're going to need a good mortgage broker.
But like, we've covered this in a couple of episodes, but when you're getting a mortgage, like, you just kind of need to be ticking boxes left, right and centre. And I suppose there's always a chance they could be looking for a reason not to give you a mortgage, and this could be one of them.
Yeah. That is, and it depends on where the bank is at the time.
Yeah.
The bank is either in the stage, in the phase where they're, oh, let's try and get as many mortgages done as we possibly can.
Yeah.
And then other times they're like, let's try and find reasons not to give them. So look, it's not impossible, but I do think the root cause needs to be addressed here first, is my answer. Are you satisfied with that answer?
I am. I think the listener will be too.
Okay, great.
I hope.
Let's go for the second one.
Couples finance question. As a financial advisor, have you seen an increase in couples splitting bills or rent in an equitable fashion based on their income?
So my understanding of the question here is you've got two people, if they've got, based on their income word, suggests to me that they're on different incomes.
Yeah.
And so let's say, just to make the math simple, combined income of 100 grand, one of them's on 60, the other one's on 40. His question there is, if
are
I'm
splitting
on,
their bills,
yeah, should 60, we be splitting 40? 60, yeah. 40? I shouldn't have used 60, 40 because everyone goes to no brainer 60, 40. But anyway, should we be splitting the bill 60, 40? Is that the way we should do it? What do you think they should do, Sarah? Now, actually, just to remind the listener, Sarah works in marketing. What do your friends think about you doing this podcast, Sarah?
They're like, Sarah, I never knew you were an expert. You don't act like an expert.
Do as I say, what I was doing. But Sarah is not a qualified financial advisor. Sarah works in marketing. And it's the reason why Sarah is here, because what we hope to get from Sarah is what you, the listener, are thinking.
Yeah.
That it's not coming from a financial advisor's head. Yeah. That's why you're sitting there.
Yeah.
So what do you think they should do?
I suppose this question is up to the couple and how they kind of value the different things in their life, I would think. When it comes to rent and bills, I personally think they should be split equally, 50-50.
Regardless of salary?
Because we're both getting rent in a... I think maybe it would be different if the person on the higher income was pushing for a more expensive rent or, you know, more expensive cost, then I think you could say, well, if you want to upgrade it, that's on you. But I think when it comes to the basic things, you're getting the service with most bills. Like, you know, with when it comes to Wi-Fi, heating, you know, when every time the heating goes on, it should be, should the heating go on?
Yeah.
So that's how, but I think it's kind of, I feel like that question is more, I don't know how you value things, but I could be completely wrong. But I feel
You see, the reality is, Sarah, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
But you're not right for everyone.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And this is what it comes down to. Certain couples like need a joint account or they'll split up. Certain couples would split up if they had a joint account, right?
Yeah.
Certain couples will do 50-50 on everything.
Yeah.
Other couples will say, right. And I'm making the number up, you put $2,000 a month into the joint account, I put $2,000 a month into the joint account, anything you earn above that that's left in your own account is your own, you spend on whatever you want, right? And that works for them. Mm-hmm. Other couples then, and you have to remember then, sometimes it's a situation where as a couple you make a decision, like we are going to have children, just as an example, right? That means that actually one of us might take a step back out of work and we might make a decision that we're at home. And you have to make sure you've had those conversations before that happens, because you could have two people on 100 grand a year each, everything's been 50-50, and all of a sudden a family decision is made that one of them's going to stay at home and their salary drops to zero and now they've no cash of their own. And that's a very difficult place to go if you haven't had a conversation about the contribution that person is making to the overall family finances, not just to raising the kids, but to the family finances and supporting the other person to be able to go out and work. So the answer to this question is it's personal.
Yeah.
Okay. There is research out there that says it should be 50-50, but I guarantee I could find research that says it should be 60-40 or whatever else it is as well.
Yeah.
So it really comes down to sitting down at a kitchen table or on the sofa and saying, right, what works for us?
Yeah.
What is the right thing? And that's a difficult conversation to have, but not nearly as difficult as saying nothing.
Yeah.
Resentment builds up very quickly when it comes to money.
Yeah.
And if you haven't had the conversation, you are going to find it very difficult to fix some of that resentment later on if you don't have your foundations right.
We kind of covered it in the season one couples episode where just kind of communication is key. And I suppose this is as important as your financial history and financial goals is as important as your relationship history and your relationship goals.
And I will say, I said at the start of this episode that, we're talking about couples, but this stuff relates to singles as well, right? And what I would say is if you're single and you're kind of going, well, I don't have anyone to split, it's much harder for you as single. Like, half a Netflix or 60-40 of a Netflix is much easier to afford than 100% of Netflix on your own, right? But what I would say is you still need to communicate with yourself, right? As an individual, your word there a minute ago was values, right? You need to decide what's valuable to you. What do you value? What's important to you to spend your money on? And that communication between you, a pen and a piece of paper is absolutely, it's even more important when you're on your own than when it's with a couple. With a couple, you have someone to bounce the ideas at, right? Later in the month when things go wrong or things change or...
Someone to blame.
Yeah, someone to blame. I was going to go, you have someone to bounce it off. Fair enough, okay. You have someone to blame. But when it comes to just you and your own and you're rowing your own boat, you really need to write it down on a pen and paper and then look at that from time to time. And I say pen and paper on purpose, right? Excel is great, do the big stuff on that. But when it comes to values, when it comes to thinking about how you really feel about stuff, writing it down makes much more sense because something happens in our brain when we write stuff down. Something, it just goes in a bit deeper. And I'm talking about writing down, I value my night out on a Thursday night with work or whoever it is, right? I value the money I spend on the gym, I value whatever else it is, and writing down that they're important to you and allocating the money to them first and then allocating the money to their stuff afterwards. Now you have to pay the rent or the mortgage or whatever, right? But once you've got your needs covered, what are your wants? And writing that down makes a massive difference. That makes sense? And writing them down is really important when you're on your own. If anyone listened to the Heuristics one a couple of weeks ago, he did recommend a book called The Invisible Gorilla, and I am about 3/4 way through The Invisible Gorilla. One of the things I've learned from it is that our memories let us down all the time.
Yeah.
And it's actually, by writing stuff down, it's the best way of getting the true memory of what you really, really wanted.
Yeah.
So writing it down as an individual, and actually writing it down as a couple, is really important too, but I guarantee your partner's going to remind you what they heard you say. That's our questions this week, Sarah. Do you want more questions?
Yes, we're always looking for more questions, suggestions for topics you'd like covered. If you'd like to be a guest, please send us a WhatsApp. And if you're sending a question, a voice note would be great. And it's to 087-291-0507.
Well done. And actually, one of the things I was asked the other day, I was doing an interview about the podcast, and I was asked, what guest would be my absolute, my dream guest? Who would I like? I'm not sure I know. So if listeners have a thought, if you have a thought, you might share it. But if listeners have a thought about who they'd love to see on the podcast, and I'm talking about big stuff here. And reminder to all the listeners, the only way we get big guests is if you hit the follow button.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you very much, Sarah. We'll see you again soon.
See ya.
It is mind-blowing, isn't it, when you think about our relationship with money, and I always talk about it, you do have to get the foundations of your money right. You have to understand what it is that you're doing on a day-to-day basis. You have to understand the impact of the little things done right repeatedly will produce big results. So if you do the little things right repeatedly, you'll get big positive results. But if you do the little things wrong repeatedly, you'll get big negative results. And that's the first step in tackling your finances. But the second step is what we talked about today, and that is your relationship with money. Why do we do the things we do? Why are we different to each other? Why does money drive some people and scare others? Why does money keep one person awake and the other person just sleep soundly? Ah, sure, we could be gone tomorrow. And that's what our relationship with money is all about. And that's what this episode was all about. And what I'm hoping you got from this is accepting that people have different attitudes and that your attitude isn't fixed on you. You can change your attitude to money. You can change your behavior around money, which means you can change your relationship with money. I hope you got something from it. I certainly did. And as always, Just one big ask. I don't ask for much, but we are trying, the team here are trying to make this podcast bigger and better all of the time. And if you do enjoy it, do me a favor. Just hit the follow button. It takes 2 seconds and it makes a massive difference to us. Thanks for listening. This was Understanding Money, and I am Owen McGee.